Place to Be Nation, welcome back to yet another Place to Be Nation pod blast covering the 100 greatest WWE wrestlers of all time. You've got the reunited Can-Am connection going here. Yes. I'm Ben Morrison. With me is the Tom Zenk of my heart, Aaron George.
Love you, Rick.
We are here today. I'm so excited, Aaron. I'm really excited for this one. It's been a long time in the making, but you and I are the two perfect people to discuss the impact of the master and the ruler of the world, none other than Sid. Two-time WWF champion, legend in his own mind, and just an all-out classic character, whether he's Sid Vicious, Sid Justice, Psycho Sid, spelled with an S. He's one of a kind.
Shut up! The whole time you were talking, I was expecting someone to cut you off.
Yeah, no, there's no one here but us Sid fans.
Oh man, I'm looking forward to it too. He is the master and ruler of my world.
Yeah, I mean the funny thing about Sid is I know everyone is immediately gonna be like, what the fuck is wrong with these two guys? Yeah. Why are they doing a podcast praising Sid? They're supposed to be, you know, internet wrestling fans. But the fact is, man, Sid was fun to watch. He had an undeniable charisma. He had a mastery over the nuance, which we'll talk about in a second, of what he did. And, you know, his matches are, you know, they're fun. They're a good time. He's very pure what pro wrestling is to me. He's a larger than life character who has a magnetism to him that goes through your TV set and right into your living room. And I just think, you know, I think as we break him down under the criteria, we're gonna hopefully make our case that this guy definitely belongs on the top 100.
Definitely belongs in the top 5.
Interesting. All right.
I'm kidding. I just wanted to see everybody shut off the podcast at that point.
They already shut it off, man.
Like, they're happy and they're talking about Sid.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, let's dive right in. Let's talk about Sid in our categories, in our NJPW categories. I think that's the best way to evaluate him here. Starting out with nuance. What do you have to say about Sid when it comes to nuance?
His aura is one of the best ever in professional wrestling.
Agreed.
I'd never seen anybody that big who was that cut and looked mm-hmm. that scary.
Mm-mm.
Like, there was something about him that felt unhinged even before he was Psycho Sid. Like, if you watch his walk to the ring at WrestleMania 8, he legitimately looks like he's going to murder Hulk Hogan.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
he's walking in rhythm to the music. And it's just such a beautiful picture of that character.
I think what one of the things, like, to support what you're saying is that Sid was one of the first characters in WWF history who felt genuinely menacing.
Yeah.
You know, you always had through the 80s Hogan fighting these big monsters, but, you know, King Kong Bundy and even, you know, this is maybe blasphemy, Andre the Giant didn't look like you said, they wanted to kill Hulk Hogan. They looked like they wanted to engage in a wrestling match with him. Sid flipped the script on that. This guy looked like a murderer. He looked like a homicidal maniac.
Yeah.
And you really believed that your heroes, whether it was Hogan, Warrior, Undertaker, whoever, they were in serious peril due to how dangerous Sid was.
He looked also like he could chase you down. Like, I know mm-hmm. I could outrun King Kong Bundy. Like, I could get away from Andre the Giant. Sid, he would hunt me to the ends of the earth to kill me.
Yeah, absolutely. Sid would come after you. And, you know, with other things, like if we're talking about longevity, obviously he first showed up in WWF in 1991
yep.
and would be on again, off again through 1997, you know, going to play softball occasionally, getting fired occasionally, but he had some good runs. He had the initial Sid Justice run in 1991, where he started out as a babyface and eventually became a heel, working against Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 8, like you talked about. They came back for his second run as Shawn Michaels' bodyguard, who once again turned against him.
Who carries knives.
Feuding with Diesel. Yeah. feuded with Diesel for a bit, became a part of the Million Dollar Corporation, went away again, and then came back for his final run where he had his two WWF title reigns and feuded with The Undertaker and did some other good stuff. So he's got the longevity. I mean, it's a little bit split up over time.
No.
But he was, you know, for the decade of the 90s, he was pretty consistent as a figure every couple of years in WWF.
He's not hurt by longevity. Like, I know that, that would kind of be like the first thing you'd think of, but no, he's there enough. And I'd also say that the characters he played, like, in terms of variety, were quite different, like, throughout.
Sure.
Like, his face...
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, even his face Sid Justice was much different than his heel Sid Justice. And then when you get to Psycho Sid and everything else, it's... He had some good variety there, which was surprising when I was looking back on him.
He was a Shades of Grey type of character in that he was never fully... if you really want to distill him down, I don't think he was truly good or evil.
No.
He just kind of was. He was just Sid.
An agent of chaos.
An agent of chaos, to be sure. But yeah, I think he straddled the line between babyface and heel very well. Basically... And this is why I score Sid high in the nuance category, because to me, I said this on the last podcast we did, nuance is all about little things, and the little things are what differentiated babyface Sid from heel Sid. They were so small. The characters were very, very similar, but like you said, they were different enough that you could tell where he was coming from. Just like, you know, the look on his face. The way he reacted to things, it was different depending on what his motivation was supposed to be on that particular day.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you're right about the little things. Like even if you watch him in a match, like just those tiny little looks to the camera that are a little too long, or the weird kind of waving to the crowd, like it shouldn't work for a man his size, but it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Let's move on to Jay, which is Jump Up, correct?
Yep.
So talk about a guy who was born for the main event. Sid was absolutely born to be a main eventer. I mean, you couldn't slot him anywhere else. He demanded to be either in the title feud or in a top rung feud. You know, he was the master and ruler of the world.
He has no business in the mid card. No business.
No, absolutely not. How out of sorts. I mean, look. I get that we're supposed to suspend disbelief and all that, but if you had it in 1995 and Sid was fighting, say, Jeff Jarrett for the Intercontinental title, you wouldn't believe that Jeff Jarrett had a chance of making it out alive, let alone with his title.
He's going to the hospital for sure.
No, absolutely. He's probably a dead man.
I saw that montage at WrestleMania 8 where he destroyed everyone.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, the powerbomb was just – it was devastating. But, look, this is a guy who – main evented with, if you want to run it down, Hogan, Diesel, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Undertaker. He was in there with all the biggest names in the 90s, and he held his own. He was a credible threat to each and every one of those guys, and was definitely at home in the WWF title picture, had other big-time matches against Vader. I think he wrestled Razor Ramon on TV a couple times. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he and the Warrior ever ended up going at each other. They were kind of, it's funny, Sid and Warrior kind of ships passing in the night. Like they always seem to, like right as Ultimate Warrior came back at WrestleMania 8, Sid was on his way out. Right as Ultimate Warrior was making his comeback in 96, and then he flaked out and Sid was brought in to replace him.
Yeah.
It's like they're meant to just – they can't – they're matter and antimatter. They can't collide.
Well, and they're very similar in a lot of ways too.
Oh, yeah.
Like in terms of intensity and like limitations too. Like, and what you're saying about their main eventers, like when he main evented with all those guys, like I would say with the exception of the match with Undertaker at WrestleMania 13 – I don't really feel any of those matches are horrible. Like,
no.
In fact, I think a lot of them are quite good. Like, everybody tends to shit on the WrestleMania 8 main event with Hogan. But
yeah,
I,
you talk about that because it's not fresh in my mind. I'll admit that.
I really like it. It starts with him. We'll talk about his promos, but it adds to everything. Like it starts with him marching to the ring like he's going to kill him. They have that sequence at the beginning where Hogan's music plays for like 4 minutes while he beats up Sid. And it's great. Like it just works. And then it becomes just a standard Hogan match, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, which is fine, you know. Like it's not Undertaker Shawn Michaels, right? But it's also not Undertaker. Like it's in the middle, and it's good. And people look at it as the low point of the show. But I don't know, like, when I rewatch that show, I always watch that match. I just, I don't know why I like it so much. I just do. Like,
I want to go to that era, but not that match, and talk about something that's a celebrated moment that I think Sid's part in has been criminally misunderstood and understated, and that is Royal Rumble 1992.
Yep.
And that's, you get to that ending, it's such a, it's revered as the greatest Rumble of all time. You know, Ric Flair winning it, going bell to bell, is shown as the big moment. But honestly, Sid and him being in the ring,
yeah,
and him throwing Hogan out, and then Hogan going crazy and, you know, pulling Sid out of the ring, it's a great moment. Flair, yeah, doesn't get his moment without the Hogan-Sid interaction, and the Hogan-Sid interaction doesn't happen without Sid being – it's so great. Sid is so gleeful,
yeah,
when he throws Hogan out that you just – you got to love. The guy in the crowd totally turned against Hogan and rooted for Sid, and I think part of that is just Sid was insanely likable right there. But then his outrage when Hogan, you know, causes him to lose the match, like, we were all on his side. I think,
yeah,
this is the first instance where you really see the Hogan backlash, and I think it has a lot to do – with whatever the opposite of backlash is for Sid. There's no word. It's not, there's no front lash or anything like that. But right. I love Sid in Royal Rumble 92. I think he's just classic.
I do too. It also helps that, like, up until the point he throws at Hogan, he's just killing guys.
Oh yeah.
Like, he kills Sergeant Slaughter. Like, he throws, mm-hmm, him into the corner face first and he flies over.
Ugh.
That era, that time from Royal Rumble to WrestleMania, everything Sid does in that era is amazing. I don't know if
it's gold.
The press conference where they announce,
absolutely,
the champion or who's going to fight.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, like, the number one, like Jack Tunney says something along the lines of, like, the person who's going to challenge Ric Flair is, and Sid stands up.
He stands up, yeah.
And then he announces Hulk Hogan, and Sid,
the look on Sid's face,
and he crumples, oh, that paper, and I keep thinking that paper. Because no one else has papers. Mm-hmm. That paper is his acceptance speech that he's meticulously written. That he.
I've never thought of that, but it's so true.
That he crumples it, and then so there's that. Then there's that, like, those are real press agents there, right? Like, or some of them anyway. And
I believe so.
He's,
yeah,
he's just screaming at them. Now what you did, Jack, yeah, Dunny, was bogus. Like, imagine how scared these real reporters are.
They're terrified.
So then it goes.
So scary.
Then you get the Saturday Night's main event where he wants to team with Hogan, and you get. Do you remember the apology promo? I apologize.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, great,
it's
promo. Just,
it's so insincere.
Yeah.
And then this is the turn, and then even the promo at WrestleMania 8 where he calls me Ichinoku and a bald headed little oaf, and like,
yeah.
Talking about,
let's talk about his promos. I think Sid's an underrated promo. I think he, you know, people have in recent years come to appreciate Ultimate Warrior style of promo, and I think that was just, you know, it needed to happen. People needed to come around on Warrior's promos and understand that they were works of art in their own right. Sid, again, comparing him to Warrior, not far off. Some of the promos he delivered, even the one where he starts screaming in the mid-90s and Jim Moss tells him that they're live,
yeah,
when he asks if he can redo it, and they say, Jim Ross says, we're live, pal.
Yeah. He just goes right back into
it. It's great stuff. Yeah, he just goes right back into it, and it's great. And he had some tremendous promos after he turned against Shawn Michaels, after he destroyed Shawn Michaels when he was his bodyguard. That's another Sid period I love. Sid as Shawn Michaels' bodyguard, because you had with Diesel – this great, like, buddy comedy, these two guys who just, you know, were partying and having fun and looking out for one another. And then with Sid, again, you're always just waiting for that moment that he's going to snap, you know?
Yeah.
He never stands in the background while Shawn Michaels is doing his little dance and looks content in any way. And when he finally snapped and went after Michaels, it was, I mean, for me as a young Shawn Michaels fan, it was devastating.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh my God, Shawn Michaels is never coming back.
He's dead.
He was just destroyed. Yeah, like, how will he ever wrestle again? How will he ever walk again? And, you know, I wasn't even that big a Diesel fan, but I was like, yeah, Diesel, go get him. Go get
right.
Sid. He destroyed our hero.
Diesel was never scary
was
as the bodyguard.
No.
Like, Sid was, like,
intimidating, maybe.
Sure. Like, he could kick your ass, clearly, but he wasn't going to murder you with a knife that he has.
Yeah. Or a squeegee.
Yeah, or a pair of scissors.
Or a pair of scissors, yeah. But, yeah, Sid, during that Shawn Michaels era, I think afterwards, after he joined the Million Dollar Corporation after that, so he wasn't doing as many promos because DiBiase was doing a lot of the promos. Yeah. But Sid, you know, he's got, like I said, I used the word magnetism already. I used the word charisma already. But those are the attributes that I assign to Sid when I think about his promos.
I would also bring up the promo at SummerSlam 96, which I believe almost single-handedly got me back into wrestling. Because I kind of bought the show on a whim. And he does this promo about how, like, he was lying awake at night and people wanted him back and they were chanting his name. And it went from, like, him talking to him screaming like every promo does. But it just really sold who that character was. Like, and as much as he was like the Warrior, I would say he was a little bit more coherent. Like, he said as many stupid things, but at least you kind of knew where he was going.
He had a beginning, a middle, and an end to all of his promos.
Yeah.
No question.
He took an introductory to drama course at some point.
Exactly.
And applied it.
He was definitely there. I guess the weakest part of the Sid portfolio, most people are going to say, is his work rate. But again, I think he's got, like you said, a catalog of pretty decent matches that you can hold up. And number one, let's say first and foremost, you talked about the montage there at WrestleMania 8. Nobody does a squash match like Sid Vicious.
No.
He is tremendous at just destroying jobbers and power bombing them through the mat. He's great. And I could watch Sid squash matches, just a compilation of those, all day long.
Yeah, where's that DVD? I'll watch that DVD.
Yes. Seriously.
I think it's because he does a few things really well. He does the power bomb's amazing that he does. Like, the one he does to Bulldog at SummerSlam 96, like, it just looks like it murders him. The one-handed choke slam is the best choke slam I've ever seen. And I've never seen anybody – as a kid, we used to – like, as a teenager, we called it – he would do bat lines instead of a clothesline. Because he would reach back like he was trying to destroy your body and hit you, like, as hard as he could with his arm. Like, and you put those three things together and no jobber stood a chance.
No. And that's just the squash matches. I mean, and I will say I never liked Sid's punches.
Nope, awful.
Because, awful punches. It looked like he would stick his thumb up for some reason when he's doing the punch. So he had a fist, but a thumb extended out and just terrible punches. So,
or his kicks.
His kicks were, they were crap too. But outside of that, great jobber matches. You already talked about the Hogan match at WrestleMania 8, which I think was a standout. Both his matches with Shawn Michaels in 96, 97 for where they traded the title back and forth were excellent matches.
He had
a good match.
Go on. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I would say the one at Survivor Series is legitimately a great match.
I agree. Like, I think it's a fantastic match. It's a good big guy versus little guy. If you want to see a prime example of how to do big guy versus little guy, watch Sid Shawn Michaels from Survivor Series 96.
Go on, sorry.
Yeah, man. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say on that, I've never been one to buy into the whole one guy completely carrying the other. Like, it doesn't work that way. Like, Sid's doing his job in there. And every great match you see, that both guys are doing a job. It's very rare that – I've never seen it that one guy carries another guy to, like, a 3.5, 4-star match.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Agreed. And then, you know, he had great matches with Bret Hart as well. His Undertaker match hurts him a little bit, but even some of the rematches they had were okay. And just when he was floating around 97, feuding with the Hart Foundation and whatnot, he had some good matches. So, to me, Sid's a guy who is an all-time great character, has great intangibles, solid underrated promo, and enough matches that make me pay attention to him as a guy who needs to be on this list.
Yeah, like if you were ignoring work rate, it would be hard pressed to find if you didn't have work rate in the equation. I think there's an argument to be made he's probably like top 40.
Absolutely.
Like
absolutely.
Maybe even a little higher because his character's so on point and so defined. Like, you know who he is. It's very clear. You know what he wants. and he plays it to a T at all moments.
Yep. Well said. Well said. I don't know. I think he lands, like you said, work rate does have to play a role, so he's not going to probably be a top 40 guy. But I say, man, I can't see him going lower than 80 or 90. I definitely have him on my list and definitely as high as potentially 80.
Yeah, I think I might have him a bit higher. Not much. Yeah. I mean, I would say maybe as high as 60, like as low as 70. Okay. And that being is just me as a wrestling fan, I tend to grab, like, for me, work rate is actually the least important category. Like,
yeah.
Like, it's not that I don't appreciate it. It's just, like, in the end, what I want is the end result. I want the great promos. I want the great matches. I want the great characters. And, yeah, he doesn't have as many great matches as a lot of guys, but he's got a much better character than a lot of guys. So it ends up balancing out. And if I prefer that as a fan, I'll tend to rate him a bit higher.
And I'll say again, the one thing that, you know, the one thing that I give to him as far as having great matches is he had a lot of legitimately great squash matches. Yeah. So if you needed to fill up a resume of where it is, I mean, he's one of the few guys who I think he made squash matches entertaining and he made them fun to watch. And he really delivered with them. So I think he's got a lot going for him.
And piggybacking on that, like, I mean, this is something we'll probably talk about if we ever do an Ultimate Warrior one, but it's like, it's hard to dock a guy for that because he always have squashes because he does a lot of squash matches. If that's what he's always booked in.
Yeah.
Like if that's a critique against the Warrior, he just has squash matches, but that's not his fault. Like that's what they wanted him to do. And he did them well. And it's the same thing here.
Yeah, he did them absolutely well. And I agree with you. A 3-disc Sid DVD with just Sid doing squash matches and promos, I'm there.
I'm buying it on day one.
I'm front of the line. All right, man. So I guess we gave our take. Bring it on. Give us the opposition. Come at us on Twitter. Come at us wherever you're going to. I'm at Ben J. Morse on Twitter. I know you're
Aaron D. George.
So, you know, if you want to tell us how messed up it is that we spent 20 minutes talking about how great Sid is, bring it. I am fully ready to handle this avalanche of hate because we proclaimed one of the greatest pro wrestlers of all time to be exactly what he says he was, and that's the master and the ruler of the world.
Shut up!
All right, guys, please send us your opinions. Be part of the Place to Be Nation 100 Greatest WWF Wrestler Project. Anyone can join. You can join us on Facebook and let us know your opinion. And Aaron, I'm sure we'll be back with another one of these soon.